So we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila chapter 10, and text number 121 and 122. There's no purport to 121. And the chapter itself is entitled, well, we're reading about the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Maybe that's the chapter title. Introduction, Prabhupada just writes, this chapter describes the branches of the tree named Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Jayo Jayo Sri Chaitanya Jayo Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the first verse, verse 121. I have given a brief description of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya in Bengal. Actually, his devotees are innumerable. And then today's verse is written here. Someone have the meter? What was that devotee? What's the meter for this? Somebody? What's the tune? Translation. I have especially mentioned all these devotees because they accompanied Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Bengal and Orissa and served him in many ways. We purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Most of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya lived in Bengal and Orissa. Thus they are celebrated as Oriyas and Gaudiyas. At present, however, by the grace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his cult is being propagated all over the world, and it is most probable that in the future history of Lord Chaitanya's movement, Europeans, Americans, Canadians, Australians, South Americans, Asians, and people from all over the world will be celebrated as devotees of Lord Chaitanya. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness has already constructed a big temple at Mayapur, Navadvip, which is being visited by devotees from all parts of the world, as foretold by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and anticipated by Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Picharnine Nirvisesha Shunivadi Paschachadi Zitarnine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadardhar Shivasati Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So, you've all been reading for probably many weeks now. You read Chaitanya Charitamrita just one day on Sundays? 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. So you've been reading about the many exalted devotees of Lord Chaitanya. I think it goes through 89 and 90 branches are told. Just read about 89th and 90th, Jagai and Madai. So today ending this section, and then next time begins describing some of the devotees of Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri. So it's interesting in Prabhupada's purport here, it's a very interesting purport, where he says in the future, he uses the term most probable. When I first read it, I thought he said maybe, but then when I just reread it now, he says it's most probable that in the future history of Lord Chaitanya's movement, Europeans, Americans, etc., people from all over the world will be celebrated as devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So I was thinking it's interesting that Prabhupada chooses this word, celebrate. It's a nice word. We use that word a lot, right? In our posters, on our websites and things like that. Celebrate Janmashtami, celebrate Rath Yatra. And it really is a very, it's the word nice is used too much, but it's a nice word. It has a very positive connotation, like you celebrate festivals and you celebrate anniversaries and you celebrate birthdays and you celebrate openings, and you know, you don't hear so much of like it was a bad celebration. celebration. It was good. It was uplifting. People come together. They're happy. Festive. It's a festival kind of a thing. And also we celebrate life's great personalities, as is being explained here. We celebrate. We rejoice in knowing there's great people that have done great things in the world, that people who have enthused us and inspired us, and therefore we feel some sense of gratitude. So here Prabhupada's using that term, that we celebrate these devotees that have been listed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then in the future, he says, most probable that in the future history of Lord Chaitanya's movement, devotees from other parts of the world also will be celebrated. So, just in the previous list, these 89th and 90th branches are particularly significant for all of us, I think. Maybe not all of us, but many of us. Jagai and Madai, who came from a very fallen background, and it describes in the text that because of Lord Chaitanya's delivering them, he was rightly named Patita Pavana, the deliverer of the fallen souls. So we see that name of Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of the fallen souls, that gives us impetus, because as exemplified by Jagai and Madai, there's nobody too forgetful or too fallen or too sinful or too distracted or too whatever to escape from the mercy or to be outside of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So this gives us hope for ourselves that despite whatever problems we may have had in the past or whatever residual habits or tendencies of the mind or qualities that we may have that aren't in line with Krishna consciousness, those things in and of themselves are not barriers. They may be a little an obstacle. They may be something that we need to work through or overcome or patiently purify through the process of Krishna consciousness, but they can't prevent us. Sometimes Maya likes to make us think that we are unqualified and too fallen, or I'm too this or I'm too that, or I shouldn't go on or I can't go on. Or sometimes we preach to people and they feel like that. But Jagai and Madai are examples for us that it doesn't matter how immersed in materialistic consciousness one may have been or one may be, or how great the struggle may be, still Lord Chaitanya's mercy is there for everyone, all of us, and there's no prevention to our becoming devotees, and we should never give up hope, knowing that Krishna's favor and Lord Chaitanya's favor is there. So Jagai and Madai are mentioned particular in the last, just before the end, and it's interesting, in the purport Prabhupada says that they were accepted by Lord Chaitanya, they were initiated, they became initiated devotees, and then he goes on to mention how their descendants are respectable brahmanas till today. So the fact that they gave up their nonsense ways and became devotees, it continued on in the future. So it gives hope for ourselves that we also maybe someday can actually come to the platform of pure devotional service. So Prabhupada also mentions in his purport, he talks about the beautiful temple that is already there in Mayapur, and about how devotees all over the world will be celebrated, and the temple is there, and devotees are already visiting this place. So I'm curious, who's visited Mayapur? Raise your hand if you've visited Mayapur. Okay, about a third of us. Okay, and I'm also curious, raise your hand if you are a European, an American, a Canadian, Australian, South American, or Asian. Africa wasn't mentioned, but he also says, and people from all over the world. Raise your hand if you're from somewhere all over the world. Okay, good. Congratulations. You're already celebrated in the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You already made it. If you're one of the people that's been to Mayapur, or if you're one of the devotees from all over the world, you're already mentioned. So congratulations so far. Doing very, very well. You're already in the book, so that's a good thing. So it's also significant here, Prabhupada mentions that this emphasis that devotees from all over the world, we know that before Srila Prabhupada, it's said that a lot of Vaishnavas, these descriptions that Chaitanya's movement would be spread to every town and village, people kind of tended to think, well, that's some kind of nice story, it's an allegory, yell all over the world. You know, it's never going to leave our village, but it's all over the world. And it's interesting, even when Prabhupada was first established his movement in New York, and then Mukunda, later Mukunda Raj, had gone to the West Coast and was inviting Prabhupada to come to San Francisco. And the history is there that the early devotees in New York, they really didn't think he was going to leave New York. They were thinking, you know, this is a New York thing, and you're the East, what's it called, the East Village guru, you know, and we're the East Village devotees, Lower East Side. And it started here, and it is here, and it's a New York thing. And maybe we're a little special, and you can't go to San Francisco, Swamiji, because it's here, and we're here. But of course, Prabhupada had a much, 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 much bigger vision. So he went to San Francisco and started the movement there. And of course, immediately began writing letters to the devotees in New York, saying, we're always connected, you could put my picture there, etc. So began to expand the movement more and more and more. But the devotees were kind of thinking that it's just here. But Srila Prabhupada, he also was not accepting this instruction as just some type of story or some type of sentiment. We have such a wonderful devotional practice that it should go all around the world, or it's already there because we're here in Navadvip. Prabhupada took it seriously, this instruction of Lord Chaitanya and the instruction of his guru, no, spread it all over the world. He took that as a literal thing. And because of that, we're here today in London, or I live in Washington, D.C., or so many different places around the world where Lord Chaitanya's movement is spread, because Prabhupada gave his heart to that instruction. As explained, he meditated on that instruction given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur from their first meeting. And of course, we know the story of the last letter, you know, was reinforced, that he really took that instruction to heart. So because of that, we're here, because of that, Harinam parties are going out, because of that, deities are there, because of that, so many books have been published, because Prabhupada took it very, very seriously. So it's significant that he mentions that here, in the reference to so many different devotees of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada goes on and expands that. Yes, and someday, most probable, the history will be written celebrating devotees, South Americans, Asians, Europeans, etc. So it's interesting, Prabhupada's vision continues to expand and give us some sight of how great the movement is meant to become and will become. And of course, next year, what's next year? What's happening next year? Besides the sun coming up and going down and we all get older? The 50th anniversary of ISKCON. That's a very significant thing. A lot of organizations don't last 50 years. A lot of organizations, they don't last after the physical departure of their founder. You know, the founder's there and has some good ideas, and then within a short period of time, it goes down, 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 and it becomes part of history. But we can see the fact is, I mean, we've still have so many different challenges, and, you know, I'm on the GBC, and from the GBC level, there's always so many problems, and some of you are managing different departments or overseeing devotees or overseeing your own lives. There's always so many problems. It's the nature of the world. There's always so many problems. But the fact is the movement's expanding. The movement is spreading, and devotees are becoming purified. And we see now we've been around long enough. We even see that some of those people that in the early days left, and of course even Prabhupada was asked about that. Even when Prabhupada was personally present, sometimes devotees would leave, sometimes very senior people. And Prabhupada had different responses to that, but one of those was he said that it's a war against Maya, and we should expect that some people may be, you know, overcome in the battle for Maya. But now the movement's been around long enough, we've even seen so many people, they fight with Maya, they struggle to be devotees a little bit, sometimes the material desires overwhelm them again, or maybe they commit some offenses and go back into their materialistic lives, and then they come back again. We've seen some not so senior people, junior type devotees that came and left and came back again and are serious in their practice. We've seen some very serious devotees, some of the big leaders in our movement 10, 20, 30 years ago that left for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years have come back and said, please, let me again take up Krishna consciousness. So, and of course, we also see that as the movement grows and time passes. I think it's Jayadwaita Swami who first said one of the biggest challenges of the movement in the early years, one of our greatest shortcomings, was we had no grandmothers. It was a big problem not having any grandmothers. Because grandmothers, in some ways, And I say this in a way of glorifying them. Kind of like children can go anywhere and say anything. Grandmothers can say anything, you know. My dear son, don't do that. You know, excuse me, Swamiji. That's not a nice thing to say, etc. We didn't have grandmothers. We didn't have that voice of conscience. And I became a member of ISKCON in 1975, and my temple president, as far as I can remember, was 24, the grand old age of 24. And I remember one of the first brahmacharis I met who was... One of the first brahmacharis I met was 16, living in the ashram, 16. I mean, now I think 16, that's like, you know, you still wearing diapers? You know, 16, that's like, that's a, and 24. I can't imagine somebody today told me, okay, your boss is 24. Okay, I'll try it, you know. But they were like the senior most people. And somehow or other, because of their sincerity and Krishna's mercy and Prabhupada's guidance, you know, the movement continued and to be stronger and to grow in so many ways, despite so many challenges of trying to start a movement practically from nothing. So next year is a very important celebration. We talked about a little bit. There was a meeting in Leicester. Quite a few devotees were there yesterday. And we talked about some of these opportunities because it's an opportunity for us to celebrate and to rejoice in the fact that we're part of this wonderful movement and so many things have been done and our lives have been benefited in so many ways. But also it's a wonderful opportunity to tell more people about ISKCON and the Hare Krishna movement, because when you have a birthday or a celebration, and isn't people even don't delight, people that even don't like you, when it's your birthday, they have to come up and say, happy birthday. Right? So, you know, it's like happy anniversary or, you know, whatever. You know, even you go to the bank and they have a sign, you know, celebrating 100 years, and even you have to think, okay, congratulations. Right? Even though we don't like your materialistic ways, but congratulations. So the fact that it's our 50th anniversary, a lot of people are going to take notice. Governments around the world are going to take more notice. And neighbors are going to take more notice. And the media, for certain, if we do what we're supposed to do, we'll take more notice, and religious leaders will take more notice. You've been around 50 years. I remember when we had the 30th anniversary, and there was a lot of attention drawn to the movement, on the maturing of the Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON at 30, because there was a sense if they were just a bunch of kids on the street and in bed sheets and robes and singing and dancing in the 60s. And when you hit 30, people start thinking, oh, well, you're not kids anymore. And at 50, the message is they've survived. And when we describe what we're doing, then it's a question of, well, maybe they're not that visible, but they seem to be not just surviving, but definitely growing and perhaps even thriving. I mean, you look at what's happening in Mayapur, you could say the movement is thriving. It's a struggle. They just did a tour in North America and collected $16 million, much to the angst, I mean the pleasure of the North American leaders. So there's, you know, there's some energy there. If you can take a tour for a month and raise $16 million to build a temple 10,000 miles away, something's inspiring people's hearts. There's some real energy there. There's a movement there. And we've done some preliminary analysis and tried to be conservative, actually, in terms of, well, what is the worldwide impact of our movement? And at this point, as best we can see, there's about 600 plus temples in the world. That's a lot of temples, not just home programs, but temples. There's something like 30, and I think this is conservative, something like 3,600 Namhata or Bhakta Viksha programs where people meet, where it's not officially a temple, but they're meeting on a regular basis. That's a significant thing. 3,000-4,000 places every week around the world. To date, there have been 516 million books, I think books and magazines, distributed around the world. I mean, that's a lot. That's a half a billion. And that's not counting postcards, flyers, brochures, things like that. That's a lot. Anybody know the languages exactly? I think it's 70 or 80. Any BBT people here? Okay, I think it's about 70 or 80 languages. We estimate, and I think this is very conservative, I think you all know in India today, with the midday meals programs that works out of Ujjain and Mumbai and Delhi, so many places. 1.2 million meals, prasada meals a day to school kids. I think it's 5, maybe even 6 days a week. That's what? 6+ million meals a week just in India. So conservatively, and I think it's very conservative, about 3 billion plates of prasadam have been distributed since the movement started in 1965. And that's a lot, 3 billion. And we know it's not just food, it's prasadam. It has spiritual effect. We think there's about 75,000 initiated disciples. And we think, oh, that doesn't sound like a lot, but the majority of those probably are Brahmins, which means priest. So those are people that perform ceremonies, that do religious rituals, that can marry people and all. They're priests. 75,000 in 50 years to have 75,000 priests in all the different continents and countries around the world. That's a significant thing. And again, we conservatively estimate about 7 million people a year worship in our temples. That's a lot of people. You know, sometimes we think, how many of us are there? Well, there's a few thousand, there's a few million. But 7 million people conservatively. I mean, in 50 years, that's a very, very significant thing. And of course, we know that when you become a devotee, it's not just that you give a dollar and become a member. You know, those 75,000 people, and to one extent, those 7 million, those are people that have, with the 75,000, strictly taken up practices of Krishna consciousness, chanting a lot of rounds a day and following regulative principles that go against every practical thing that people are proposing you do today. In Washington, D.C., within the last couple of years, Washington and the whole country, they legalized marijuana. Same-sex marriages are now legal throughout the United States. And somebody, a city council person, just proposed prostitution should be legalized. So, like, what do you guys do? Well, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no meeting, and no gambling. So we're not exactly going with the flow of modern society in terms of social norms, but we're still growing, and people are seeing the value. So it's some very, very wonderful things. So we should be excited about this celebration. Same way we celebrate devotees, as Prabhupada says, we should celebrate this big event of our 50th anniversary. And we should all be working hard to plan now. I think some of you, many of you hopefully saw some of the pictures and the videos from Calcutta. They just celebrated a few days ago, the 50th anniversary of Prabhupada leaving Calcutta and coming to the West. So right now, 50 years ago, Prabhupada was on the Jaladuta, making his way to America, and then from there to Canada, from there to the UK, to spread Krishna consciousness. So we're just right now in the middle of that 50th anniversary. And next year being the 50th anniversary of the institution of ISKCON that Prabhupada created. And coming up next month in Boston, where Prabhupada landed, they're also planning big events. These are kind of pre-events. The big year is next year for most of us. But they're celebrating Prabhupada's leaving and Prabhupada's arriving. Next year we'll celebrate the founding of ISKCON. But in Boston they're doing some wonderful things. They've rented a boat that holds 900 people. So they're going to go out in the water and kind of tell stories of Prabhupada as he's approaching the Boston Harbor where he first landed, and have some celebrations out there and offer some different memories and worship of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna for Prabhupada's coming. So in many, many different ways, devotees will be celebrating. I've heard here they're talking about a big concert, perhaps with Hema Malini. They're talking about a VIP event in Parliament. Of course, many, many events for the devotees. And we should all be thinking, what can I do as my particular personal offering to Srila Prabhupada in this special anniversary year? Because, you know, Prabhupada, he made so many wonderful contributions, just by his own example, of course, by his books, but he also spent a lot of time creating the institution. And he understood, we were hearing Bhakti Chumaraj yesterday, Prabhupada knew that in order to have an international movement, it needs more than just one teacher or one guru or one acharya. It needs an organization, it needs an institution. And we're celebrating that Prabhupada created, this institution of ISKCON. So we should be excited about that and think about what can we do to help ensure that's a grand festival. Of course, our Janmashtami will be 50 eyes. It'll be the 50th anniversary of Janmashtami on a global level. It'll be the 50th anniversary of Rath Yatra, the 50th anniversary of Gaur Purnima, etc. So all of our different events will be 50 eyes, but also some special events. And we should also individually think, well, what can I do? What unique thing can I do? How can I contribute? How can I be part of a team for some special 50th event? Or how can I make some individual contribution? We've got a couple months. It's not tomorrow for us. One good thing about the kickoff in Calcutta, it's kind of a wake-up call for the rest of us. Gosh, they filled the stadium with 18,000 people, and they had so many people come, they emptied it in the middle of the day and refilled it. So 36,000 people came, the governor of West Bengal, some big soccer star, which I don't know because they play football in America, the other kind, so I don't know, but some very famous. Cricket star or soccer star? Anybody know? Cricket. Must have been cricket star. Oh, you're so renounced. Nobody knows? Anyway, some very... if devotees from India. Who is that? Yes. Devotees in India, they say that with a smile. Yes, he came. It's a very big thing. So it attracts a lot of attention and interest. So, we should have some big, big events. So, what can we do ourselves for the 50th anniversary? And not just for that, we should be thinking, what can I do? Are there some things that I can do? Just as the movement's continued for 50 years by Prabhupada's mercy and Lord Chaitanya's mercy and Krishna's mercy and the effort of all the Vaishnavas, we should also be thinking, what can I do to help ensure the movement continues and grows for the next 50 years? Or 500 years, or 5,000 years, or 10,000 years. And one thing that I think we can never say enough about, and it was one of the themes yesterday, and Prabhupada emphasized this, that we should cooperate amongst each other. Why so much emphasis on cooperation? You know, Prabhupada said famously, your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate. Why such an effort on that? Well, because it's a community. We're performing sankirtan. That means congregational chanting, not individual chanting. And because Prabhupada knew it would take an institution, it would take a community to move into the future. And also because we know it's described in the scripture, this is Kali Yuga. This is the age of love and trust. Isn't it? No. This is the age of Kali. This is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. And it's described that even among brahmanas, there's quarrels, and sometimes there's hypocrisy in it. You know, because of our past condition, it's hard for us to always act in a sattvic way as we should. So therefore, it takes some effort to cooperate. Bhakti Chirmaraj was speaking yesterday about how all of us, by the pressure of our false ego, we so much want to be in the center. That's why we're here in the material world. We want to be in the center and have Krishna in the shadows. So that's reflected in our own daily lives, that I want to be in the center. And as Maharaj was saying yesterday, why does he get all the attention? Or why does she get all the attention? Or why does he get all the influence? Or why does she get all the recognition, etc.? These are manifestations of a dirty mind. You know, our minds, they're dirty. You know, we read about exalted devotees. They are completely ecstatic and fully satisfied to be in a very humble or nondescript or not such an important position, just serving and assisting, because their love for Krishna is manifest in that way, and they experience such loving relationships with Krishna and with the other devotees by just serving them and pushing them forward. They don't need all of these materialistic things that our mind still tells us we need. So that's one of the things it's a challenge for us. You know, how do you cooperate with somebody when your mind's saying, I should be up there? That should be me that they're appreciating. Well, he's getting credit, but actually, when he was a bhakta 27 years ago, I remember I brought him prasadam one day, and he said because of that he stayed in the movement. So all this credit should go to me. And other nice thoughts like that that come into our minds. Because we know our mind, especially in this age of love and trust, it's also described our mind as our best friend. Right? If we're pure devotees. But until then, it's nasty. And it likes to say nasty little discouraging things. There's a wonderful story in the Mahabharata. When Karna was going to fight, and if I remember the chronology of the story, he went to Duryodhana and said, you know, I'm as good as Arjuna, but he has one advantage, which is Krishna is his charioteer. And if I have a charioteer as good as Krishna, then I can defeat him. And there's only one person who can do that. I'm not going to get his name right. Is it Shalya, right? Yeah. Shalya, who was Yudhishthira's uncle, who earlier, by Duryodhana's trick, was fighting for Duryodhana against the Pandavas. So Duryodhana went to him and said, hey, you know, we know you're a king, but would you mind being a suitor for a day and driving the chariot? And of course, he didn't appreciate that. But Duryodhana had many gifts, one of which was ability to convince people and to speak very diplomatically. So he convinced him, so he rode the chariot. But then, I believe it was Yudhishthira, perhaps Krishna told him, but Yudhishthira went to his uncle and said, hey, you're going to be asked to ride this, to drive this chariot. He might have even told him before he was asked. I don't remember the chronology. But he said, just do me one favor. When you're driving the chariot, discourage him. Which is one of those breaking the laws of Dharma. The charioteer is the servant of the kshatriya. And we all know when you read these Mahabharata and other things, the kshatriyas, there's always so much bravado. You know, just see my arms. No one can defeat me. You know, sometimes we think, well, these guys are really puffed up. Part of it, they're going out to like put their lives on the line. And you know, you've got to be enthusiastic. You know, if you're like on a sports team, you don't go out there thinking, these guys have a much better goalie than we have. Our defense really stinks compared to these guys. We don't stand a chance, right? You don't do that. Even if you've got six guys in your team this big and the other people are that big, it's like, okay, let's get them. You know, you have to enthuse yourselves, isn't it? You know, we enthuse ourselves in devotional service. So anyway, so he said, okay, I'll do that. So as he's driving the chariot of Karna, Karna's saying, take me to see Arjuna. I can defeat him. He's nothing compared to me. And Salya was saying, actually, you don't stand a chance. He's so much better than you. You are a mouse compared to him. And Sahib would say, hey, please, you're supposed to be on my side. Will you please be quiet? And after a few minutes or some time of fighting, Karna exhibited his skills so well that he impressed Salya? Salya, right? He impressed Salya so much that he said, okay, actually, you're pretty good. And he started encouraging him. So the point is that being encouraged is a very, very important thing. And being enthusiastic is a very, very important thing. And cooperating. If we are encouraging one another, if we're cooperating, then we're very, very strong. But if we're not careful in the way we interact with each other, we can discourage each other and not cooperate. And Prabhupada said that's the way to show our love for him. So with this 50th anniversary coming up, and then looking into the future, it's very, very important if we're thinking, well, how can I make a contribution to make the movement go on? And as Prabhupada said one time famously, there are no big devotees in my movement, there's only little devotees. He said that. So as little devotees, one of the little things we can do is always encourage other devotees, always try to cooperate with other devotees, and always appreciate other devotees. It's a very, very important thing to appreciate devotees and appreciate, just like here, Prabhupada's saying, we're celebrating devotees. So how can we appreciate devotees? How can we celebrate the devotees? How can we make sure we cooperate? And if we're going to cooperate, then it begins with a sense of appreciation. If you don't want to cooperate with somebody you don't appreciate. If you think someone is not giving some value or is not important to you, it's hard to cooperate with them. But if you're understanding how important this person is in your life, then you cooperate. Isn't it even like a little kid who sometimes children are a little rambunctious and not very cooperative, but they stop and think, okay, I don't want to do what mommy says, I don't know what daddy says until it's time for dinner. Because I definitely want dinner, and if mommy doesn't cook, I don't get to eat. So I'll be in a mood for a few minutes, but then I'll be nice because mommy made my favorite dessert. So they understand the value of the relationship. So as devotees, to cooperate, we have to understand the value of the relationships with devotees and how dependent we are on our relationships with devotees. So a few practical things. One, if the movement's going to go on nicely, we have to be very, very careful to never discriminate between Vaishnavas. It's described in the Upanishadamrita and elsewhere. This is a big offense. If we think this is an English devotee and this is an Indian devotee, or this is a woman devotee, this is a man devotee, or this is a white devotee, this is a black devotee, or this is an American devotee, this is a German devotee, and somehow allow ourselves to think there's higher or lower statuses based on the body, that's a big problem. And it's a challenge for us, actually, because we know the tendency is there are temples that cater to certain economic, racial, ethnic groups. There are churches in America, you know, they have that this crust of people goes to that church, or this demographic group, or this economic group goes, or this racial or cultural group goes. And we may find in the future, I mean, in America, we may have ISKCON temples where people primarily speak Spanish. And we may have temples where they primarily speak English. We may have temples where they primarily speak Gujarati or whatever. That may happen in some ways. But we have to be very, very careful that we don't allow ourselves to become so infected and affected by a bodily concept of life that we differentiate between devotees. That we think, well, you know, we're going to... And even in terms of ashrams, and this is something I kind of find a pet peeve, and it's most noticeable in India and Mayapur particular because it's such an international place. You know, I can never understand why sometimes you see... It's because of lack of maturity, lack of training, but it's something we should be careful about. Sometimes you're trying to peacefully stand before the deities, and either you or someone near you gets rudely pushed out of the way by a very enthusiastic, usually brahmachari, nothing against the brahmacharis, but it tends to be the brahmacharis, who are clearing the way for a, quote, senior devotee. You know, it's like, excuse me, but this sannyasi or this Prabhupada disciple or this GBC or whatever needs to see the deities, so you get out of the way. Which is a complete violation of Vaishnava principles, because if you're standing, worshiping, observing the deities, who am I to push you out of the way? Now, if somebody humbly says, excuse me, you know, it's a Maharaj here, we know we respect the senior devotees, we respect sannyasis, those who are serving as gurus, GBCs, temple presidents, etc. We want to make sure they get nice facility. But it shouldn't be like, nice American term, hey buddy, get out of the way. Right? That shouldn't be the mood. And sometimes maybe due to urgency or whatever that happens, but it's not proper and it's offensive. We shouldn't think, oh, it's only a grihastha, or it's only a brahmachari, or it's only a woman, or it's only a second or third or fourth or fifth generation devotee. We shouldn't think like that. You know, sometimes there's this tendency to think that I'm senior to you because you joined in 1977 on April 25th. And I became a devotee, and don't forget it, April 21st, 1977. So let's just keep it really straight. Who's senior here and who's supposed to serve who? Okay? Is it clear? You got it clear? Okay. That's not our philosophy. Our philosophy is if I came in April 21st, if I'm doing a few things right, I should be, maybe 3 days more mature, which means I should be the one that understands I'm supposed to serve you. Isn't it? That's our philosophy. If I'm actually senior, then it means I understand I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. And of course, the customs are there. You know, we do respect senior people. We do respect senior ashrams, you know, sannyasis. And certainly we need to respect our siksha gurus and our diksha gurus and temple presidents and all that. But not that we think, you know, we don't respect other people. We respect everyone, and we should be concerned about everyone's position. So this discrimination we have to be very, very careful about. It's the seed of dissent. It's the seed of disharmony. It's the seed of conflict. And if we see it in our heart, if we see it in others, we should weed it out and know that it's maya. So don't discriminate, first thing. Second thing, we should always remember how we're dependent upon other devotees. I mean, where would we be if we didn't, if we weren't able to come to the temples and have some other devotees playing the drum and playing the kartals, and sometimes we don't feel like dancing, and then they start dancing, and next thing we know, I'm dancing. So would we always have that enthusiasm? Would we always have that, to carry those beautiful melodies? Do we know all the melodies that so many other devotees know? Where would we be if we had to cook our own prasadam? Some of us may have to do that for health reasons or whatever, but generally, devotees give us prasadam. And we know prasadam is our lifeblood. Devotees, they remind us of Krishna. They set an example for us. They teach us. They encourage us. Nice word, encourage. To give courage. They encourage us. Yes, you can chant. Yes, you can be a devotee. Yes, you are a devotee. Yes, you're doing fine. Don't let that bother you. You'll make it. Everything's okay. Don't take it so seriously. So Prabhupada said that to think we can become a devotee or pure devotees on our own, he said it's a hallucination. That's a strong word, hallucination. Prabhupada knew about hallucination. There was a lot of folks that came to him who were suffering from hallucinations. He knew this was the 60s. He was very aware what that word meant, and he said it's a hallucination. So we should not discriminate against devotees. We should understand how dependent we are on devotees. And of course, we should serve devotees. We know we hear all about that all the time, that we should serve other devotees. But we should make a conscious effort to do so. And Prabhupada explained that if we don't feel like it, that's the perfect opportunity to do it. There's a nice story I heard a couple years ago. It was Gargamuni Prabhu in the very early years. Devotees were just starting to pay obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. It hadn't really kind of caught on as an expected behavior. And he went to Prabhupada, I think still Swamiji at that point, and said, Swamiji, the others are paying obeisance, they're bowing down before me, but I don't feel like it. Is that okay? And Prabhupada said, actually, it's okay that you don't feel like it. Just do it and the feeling will come. Wonderful instruction. And it's interesting, Prabhupada's wisdom. He didn't go up to him and say, you should bow down. But when he asked about it, time, place, and circumstance, Prabhupada took advantage of that to say, okay, even if you don't feel like it, bow down. So sometimes we may not feel like serving devotees. That's when we should go out of our way to serve devotees. You know, and you may find yourself at the Sunday feast really struggling because you want to eat to feast. But you say, no, let me help serve out. And your friend upstairs may be saying, why don't you just dump the bucket right over their head? Or some nice Vaishnav sentiment like that. But you ignore those foolish things, being all this chit-chat up here, and you just go on serving in a humble mood. And gradually, that genuine desire to serve and to realize, you know, this is a person led kirtan yesterday, or maybe last Tuesday, or every Tuesday for 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, 20. I owe this person my service. I want to try to serve this person. This person set such a nice example. They've been married nicely for 20 years and such a good example at Grahastha Ashram. Or they've been doing book distribution for 1 week or 1 year or 10 years. Or they've been cleaning the floor so nicely. You know, where would we be if, I don't know which wonderful Vaishnava here cleans the temple floor every day or once a week or whatever. Where would we be if they weren't cleaning the floor? I travel sometimes and I visit places where they haven't cleaned the floor and the room they give you for a while. And it's not very encouraging. You don't feel real good. You don't feel very Krishna conscious. So that's important service. I was in Singapore, Bali? Singapore recently. And there were some devotees way in the back, one of these pot washing rooms that is meant for rapid advancement. There were no windows and no fresh air and way in the back and in the dark, and there was a devotee up there cleaning pots. And I stopped, I told him, I said, you know, you're the most important person here. And he said, really? I said, yeah. I said, tomorrow morning the cook comes in. If there's no clean pots, there's no restaurant. There's no prasadam. There's no offering. You're the most important person here. And it's a fact. Because if he didn't clean the pots, there'd be no cooking, there'd be no offering, there'd be no prasadam. No point cutting a boga because there's no pots to cook it in. He's the most important person there. So in the same way, if someone isn't washing the floor, where do we go? So we should be thinking like that. If someone wasn't performing, I mean, look, the deities are so gorgeous here. How many devotees did it take to make the flower vases and to clean the altar and to make the garlands and to dress the Lord and to later undress the Lord and to cook for the Lord and to, you know, all the different things that go on, designing the curtains that were made whenever recently, not too long ago. So many of the backdrops, stunning backdrops. If those devotees weren't doing that service, where am I going to get enlivened? So we should see how dependent we are and then want to serve the devotees, to assist them in their service, care for them. And of course, in the earliest days of our movement, there was kind of a tendency to think serving devotees or caring for them meant caring for their soul. Because in those early days, we all were fully realized and understood and could see the soul. Therefore, why think about the body? We were so advanced. But now that we've become a little less advanced, we realize, well, there's a body there too. There's also a mind. There's also emotional needs, intellectual needs. So we should care for devotees at all levels. There's a lot of emphasis these days on devotee care. And I remember Bhakti Tirthamaraj would sometimes describe that we know we're soul, but for now we're a package. We're a package deal. There's soul, there's body, there's mind, there's intelligence. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote like that. We have spiritual needs, emotional needs, intellectual needs, physical needs. They all need to be cared for. So in our efforts to care for devotees, we should not just think that I'm caring for your soul. I remember as a new devotee, I had one particular devotee took me on Sankirtan and said, my purpose is to take care of your spiritual needs by duly chastising you regularly. And somehow or other I survived. He didn't, actually, but somehow I did up till today by Krishna's grace. So serving devotees doesn't mean chastising them. Sometimes we may have to help correct Vaishnavas, but generally it means serving them, assisting them, making sure that our bodily, emotional, spiritual, physical needs, they're all taken care of. And the final point, as far as just picking out a few, how we can celebrate devotees, is take a little time to thank devotees. Sometimes there's this misunderstanding in our movement, and part of it comes from, I think, a misquote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. We shouldn't really go out of our way to appreciate devotees or thank devotees because they become puffed up. You know, if you glorify me, then you're my enemy. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said something like that. But it's also a historical fact. When devotees were having a quarrel, as an example, he would bring them together and say, first, you glorify him, you glorify him. Once you start out appreciating each other, now we can talk and discuss whatever the difficulties are. But it has to come from a mood of appreciation, or else we're not going to be able to work this thing out. So we should try to really develop a mood of appreciating devotees. In the communications course, which has been a whole bunch of very wonderful devotees worked hard to put that course together some years ago, there's a whole session on appreciating devotees. And we actually recommend there that we should every day make a point verbally, consciously, to appreciate 3 devotees a day. To approach at least, and others as well, not just devotees, but let's talk about devotees. At least 3 people a day to consciously go out of our way, or have it become a habit, to naturally show our appreciation for them. Someone offers a wonderful kirtan in the morning, or maybe just a kirtan in the morning that woke us up and inspired us to take just a minute. Thanks, Prabhu, appreciated that. Or if you're leading a kirtan, someone plays drum for you, take a minute. Thanks for leading the kirtan. Or sometimes some of us, and this is a long-standing, wonderful community here, some of us may have been members of this community for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. There may be people in this community that have been cooked the Raj Boga for 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, 20 years, and you never took time to thank them. Where would you be if that devotee wasn't cooking Raj Boga? Where would we be if the pujaris weren't wonderfully dressed in the deities? And do we make a point to go tell them, Prabhu, Mataji, thank you for dressing the deity so beautifully. I'm so inspired. I'm really grateful to you for doing that. Or on a Sunday, going up to a particular person you know has given their £1 a week for the last 20 years, or maybe 20,000 pounds last week, or whatever it is, telling them thank you. Because of your contributions, your sacrifices, we're able to sit here on a wonderful floor in a beautiful building with wonderfully worshipped deities because of you. Because when devotees get a little appreciation like that, we feel inspired. You know, devotees going out and doing book distribution should appreciate the pujaris. The pujaris should appreciate the book distributors. The cook should appreciate the managers, etc., etc., etc. And when we develop that mood, then we become much happier. Because generally in this age of Kali, we love to find faults, isn't it? We just love it. We really, really love it. You know, someone goes out for 15 years in a row and distributes books, and one day we get a complaint. Prabhu, you're really hard on people. I got a complaint. I met somebody yesterday, or, you know, again with the Raj Boga. Someone's been cooking Raj Boga for 20 years. Nobody says a thing until one day we realize we should give them some feedback. Mataji, the rice was burnt. What good is that? We shouldn't do that. We go out of our way to appreciate it. So I'll just leave you with that thought, suggest that maybe starting today, help improve the nice sangha in our communities here and around the world, to make an extra effort to think about how dependent I am for devotees, how grateful I am for devotees. Prabhupada instructs us here, we should celebrate devotees, we should celebrate the fact we're fortunate enough to live with devotees, and think of one or two or three people who may be, you know, preached to you today or yesterday or 5 or 10 years ago and encouraged you in your devotional service. There may be somebody who gives, you know, classes or nice kirtans or just serves prasadam with such a smile that you feel inspired to go on in your devotional service, even sometimes when you don't feel so inspired. And maybe there may be somebody here, maybe a lady devotee, a man devotee, an older devotee, a younger devotee, a child devotee, who just kind of nourishes your Krishna consciousness. There could be 50 people here or 200 people here that nourish your Krishna consciousness. So let's try to individually and as a culture go out of our way to show that appreciation, because that also shows our gratitude and increases within my heart, our hearts, the spirit that I'm a servant of others. And the fact is, it enlivens those devotees. One of the greatest services, we hear you should serve the devotees, one of the greatest services we can do is appreciate them. Because we all know we're servants, and we're trying to be servants. We're trying to stop being the enjoyer. And when someone comes up and says just a couple words to us, Prabhu, your kirtan, your class, your being here, your smile, your cooking, your cleaning, it helps me in my devotional service. We get inspired by that. Because then we think, wow, it makes a difference. Isn't it? You know, I'm cleaning the floor every day. One person says, Prabhu, that's great the way you clean the floor. I feel enlivened to come to the temple in the mornings because the floor is so clean. The devotee, what are they going to do? Are they going to get puffed up from that? I'm such a great floor cleaner. No, they're going to think, wow, this is wonderful. Devotees, it's actually making a difference. They're going to clean the floor even better. You know, next day you're going to come in, they'll be on their hands and knees with a scraper getting that piece of gum that was left over 62 years ago before the devotees took the temple that nobody else ever cleaned, because they're going to be inspired to do even better. So in so many ways, it's a wonderful evolutionary circle of appreciation and inspiration. So just to end in that mood, my gratitude for all the devotees here. I haven't been to the UK in some time. I don't know why. Committed some offense or something. I think it's been 3, 4, 5 years since I've been here. But such a beautiful, I mean, this temple in particular is such a beautiful temple. Since I was here, the George Harrison Garden is there, the new Prabhupada Garden is there. I don't have enough pious credit yet to attend Janmashtami here, maybe someday, but just being here a few days before, seeing so many tents, knowing for years, what is it, 50, 60,000 people come here on Janmashtami? It's fantastic. And I mentioned this yesterday, and I'll mention again here, some devotees weren't there yesterday. As far as I know, from my travels around the world and my work in communications, the temples in the UK, and the manor is certainly a leading role in this, have done maybe the most, and I say this in a positive way, integrated community, Christian conscious community in the world, in that we've made friends with the neighbors, despite we know the dark history with the neighbors. I mean, at some point in time, we were both demons in each other's eyes, and that's completely changed. We're friends. We work cooperatively. They come here. We loan them our tents, etc., for their events. The relationship that's been established with the government leaders, with the interreligious leaders, with Hindu leaders, to a large extent with the media. These are the kind of things, relationships, that our movement needs to build across the world so that people more and more take us seriously. As was pointed out, I think you pointed out yesterday, not that many people around the world know us. I mean, even in the UK, not everybody knows us. We have a lot of work to do. We shouldn't think, oh, it's all been done. You know, the senior devotees pioneered the day. Now there's nothing left to do. It's not like that at all. We barely scratched the surface of having an impact on the world. We've achieved a lot, but just the very, very, very beginning. The movement needs to get stronger and have more and more impact on the world. And one of the ways we do that is by building relationships with people, becoming involved in the larger society. So when they're planning in the future, when they're looking at how to organize the neighborhood, they're looking at how to celebrate festivals, they want the Vaishnava perspective, they want to know the Krishna conscious perspective, they want to know how they can do better. We have that role to play. We're not just supposed to live in some isolated community chanting Hare Krishna. It's like sometimes less mature Harinam parties. Everybody stands in a circle, looks at each other, and, you know, waves their rear towards the public. That's not Sankirtan. That sends a message. We're doing our thing, and, you know, what we think of you is... That's not a nice thing to say to people. We should be looking to people and integrating, you know, interacting with people, inviting them to take part. So in the same way, our communities can't just be looking internally. We have to be looking outside, how we can communicate, how we can build relationships so that everyone feels welcome to come here. Everyone feels welcome to participate in some capacity. So this temple, this community, this yatra, the UK yatra, I think has done a, as far as I see, as along with India, perhaps, has done a really wonderful job of doing that. Perhaps more so because, you know, we're not the traditional religion of the UK. So my appreciation to devotees that worship the deities so gorgeously. They're obviously wonderfully taken care of and very happy. And so many people come to see them and are inspired. And the grounds are beautiful and the preaching is beautiful and so many wonderful things. So thank you all very much, and I'll stop there, and there's a few minutes for questions.